This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
I saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as 3 suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
Welcome to the Migration Podcast, your guide for waterfowl hunting tactics, gear, and conservation. And now, your host, Brian Halbly.
What is up, everyone? As Johnny M. said, I'm your host, Brian Halbly. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in to the Migration Waterfowl Podcast, presented by Bluebird Waterfowl. Check out their new spinning wing decoy prototype wings. They're offering a 6-wing prototype set to anyone interested in testing them out. Check them out at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or call them at 800-564-0914 and be one of the first people to get your hands on them. This episode is also brought to you by these other fine partners, the Duck Hole and Company, Rig'em Right Outdoors, and CK Custom Calls. I'll tell you more about all of these partners later in the show. It's been a really great week so far. And speaking of partners, I got a call from Ben Myers over at Flight Day Ammunition earlier this week. I've been following the Flight Day Ammo story through my friend Elliot Snyder, who, as you know, hosts the North American Waterfowler podcast and the Freelance Duck Hunting YouTube channel. Elliot has been super impressed with the innovation and quality of the ammunition from them, and I had planned to give some a try this year now that my ammo reserves have been depleted after a long waterfowl season. And Ben is just an interesting and knowledgeable guy to listen to. He's been on Elliot's show quite a few times, and I'd highly recommend you head over there and listen to those episodes, especially the recent one they just recorded, episode number 180. They really dive into what's going on with the bismuth supply and the new line that Ben will be releasing soon. The amount of research and development that goes into Flight Day Ammo is really impressive. So you can imagine my excitement when Ben said that he had called to discuss a partnership between Migration Waterfowl and Flight Day Ammunition. I was impressed with how he has built his small business and the great reputation he has garnered. His vision and goals for his company are admirable, and we share a similar approach to growing our businesses the right way. We agreed that a partnership would benefit both of us, and I feel very comfortable representing and sharing his products with all of you. I'm excited to get to work testing what shells pattern best out of my shotgun, and I'll be bringing you along on all of my testing through the podcast and the YouTube channel. In the meantime, head over to flightdayammo.com and check out everything Ben has going on over there. Be sure to use code MW10 at checkout for 10% off. That's MW10. Ben will be joining me on the show in the near future to dive deep into everything Flight Day Ammunition has to offer waterfowl hunters. And be sure to give him a follow on Instagram and Facebook. Well, I had to cut grass this week for the first time. Not that I love cutting grass by any stretch of the imagination, but I do love seeing everything greening up after a long winter. Everything goes from drab browns and grays to bright, vibrant greens, and the tulips and daffodils are popping and throwing their colors everywhere. It's just a great time of renewal and hope and excitement of things to come. And it's Easter week. Easter represents hope for everyone. What a time of joy and reflection for us Christians. The celebration of Jesus' victory over death and the securing of our salvation by the heavy price he paid for our sins, everyone's sins, past, present, and future. It is finished. And if you don't know the story of Easter, I invite you to read all about it in the Bible. Start with the book of Matthew, chapter 26. If you don't have a Bible, you can just Google Matthew chapter 26, and there's lots of good Bible websites out there that have the entire Bible there for you to look at. So I'd invite you to check that out. Turkey hunting's coming up right around the corner. It opens in Ohio this Saturday. I'm sure you've heard me talk about my hunting lease that I have over there. It's going to be a crazy weekend with Easter and family get-togethers, but I'm probably going to make some time to get over there at least for a morning hunt Saturday morning. So a little bit of excitement for that coming up. As I mentioned in the past, I'm not the most dedicated turkey hunter. I really enjoy it when I'm doing it, but it's just one of those things that I don't think about much when it's not turkey season. Nothing against turkeys. It's a lot of fun. Being 50 years old, and I'm sure I'm repeating myself to a lot of my longtime listeners here, but you know, I've been very fortunate to harvest a lot of mature toms over the years, and it's never been particularly difficult, although some hunts have been more challenging than others, but it's just not my favorite thing to do. I mean, like I said, I enjoy it, and I don't want to take anything away from the wild turkey. They're fun to hunt. They're delicious to eat. I respect them all the way around, and you know, if I do kill one, I make sure we use every bit of it, but you know, it's just kind of that. For me, it's kind of that thing to fill the gap between winter and getting the fishing season going. So, and being able to go over to Ohio opens that up a little bit earlier for me. Pennsylvania is notoriously very late on their turkey seasons, and that's not opening until May 3rd, which is 2 weeks after Ohio opens. I'm sure the biologists have their reasons for it. It's just hard to wait this long when you see so many other people tagging turkeys around the country. And some more bad news for Pennsylvania. Once again, the Sunday hunting prohibition has not been lifted. I was told from what I thought was a reliable source that this was finally the year the Pennsylvania legislature was going to pass a bill to repeal that prohibition on Sunday hunting. Supposedly, all the people, organizations, and lobbyists who stood against it all these years had all been satisfied, and it was a done deal. Well, here we are. Apparently, that wasn't the case. So once again, Pennsylvania, I'll be taking my money out of state on a lot of Sundays, a lot of weekends, and a lot of full weeks, to be truthful. Me and tens of thousands of other Pennsylvania hunters. You continue to fail the great hunters of the state, our great tradition of hunting, and the next generation of potential future hunters who may only have a Sunday open to participate. But on to a more positive note, my beautiful wife Karen's birthday falls on Easter this year, so I'd like to take this opportunity to wish her a very happy birthday and thank her for all of her support as we close in on the one-year anniversary of Migration Waterfowl. That's right, next week's episode will be number 52. 52 straight weeks of getting behind this microphone and bringing you consistent and hopefully entertaining content with some pretty great guests. It was fun getting Billy Campbell on the show for episode 50, and I think you will really enjoy who will be joining me for my one-year anniversary show. So stay tuned for that. I've mentioned our 2025 giveaway on our YouTube channel many times. I'm trying to get to 1,000 subscribers before we do that giveaway. If you want to get entered to win a case of ammo, a couple of hats, we're giving away a Bluebird Waterfowl Animator. Got some duck calls here as well. Lots of great prizes. Head over to our YouTube channel. Find the 2025 giveaway video. You're going to want to like that video, comment done under that video, and make sure you're subscribed to the channel. And once we get to 1,000 subscribers, we will pull the winners for that giveaway. Haven't had a ton of stuff to upload to the video to the YouTube channel for the video side. I did get some bonus footage from a short hunt posted last week, and I've got a bunch of unboxings and reviews for a lot of the stuff my partners have been sending me, so I need to get to work on that so I can have some decent content up there for you throughout the off season. On this episode, I'll be talking with Ashley Barta from Kansas. Ashley shares her journey into waterfowl hunting, including the challenges she faced after losing her mother and how she found solace and purpose in the outdoors. We talk about her experiences as a woman in a traditionally male-dominated sport, the importance of community, and her involvement with various women's organizations that promote outdoor activities. Ashley also discusses her favorite hunting locations, the thrill of her first hunts, and the lessons learned along the way, emphasizing that it's never too late to pursue one's passions. We discuss her experiences and the changes she's seen during her 5 years of waterfowl hunting. We also talk about hunting safety, personal growth, the importance of solo hunting, and the bond people develop with their waterfowl dogs. Ashley discusses her memorable hunting stories, the challenges she has faced, the lessons she has learned, and her future aspirations in the hunting community. We also talk about traveling to hunt and the joy that outdoor adventures can bring. Happy Easter to you and your family. Thanks to God for blessing us with another opportunity to get together for another episode. So let's get into episode number 51. Welcome back to another episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. I appreciate you all coming back and joining me today. I've got a special guest tonight, Miss Ashley Barta from Kansas, right?
Yes.
How's everything going tonight?
It's going well. Thank you.
That's great. Yeah, I appreciate you making time to come on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been following you a little bit on Instagram. Looks like you had a pretty good season this year. A little bit of setbacks with the shoulder, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes.
Yeah. And if you want to take a few minutes and introduce yourself to our listeners, you know, let them know anything you want to tell them about yourself.
Well, of course, my name is Ashley Barta, and I live out in Kansas, right in the middle of Kansas, actually, 5 miles from the geographical center of Kansas, about 15 miles from the marsh, which is very handy when the season is happening, and we have water. My paying job is a nurse practitioner. What I would like to do full time is just hunt and not have to go to work, but amen. Life is life. I have 2 black labs, Jake and Stella, and they're my best friends and my family. And pretty much we just enjoy hunting and being outside and traveling. Those are our main things. So Jake's pretty lonely right now because Stella's at the trainer, so he's being very attention seeking. He'd like to be on the podcast as well.
Yeah, I bet. So how long have you been in nursing?
About 24 years.
Okay. You have a crazy schedule like nurses out my way, like unlimited overtime and getting worked to death?
Yes. And that's kind of how I got my shoulder hurt. So now I just work a straight 72 hours a pay period. I was working, I don't know, we used to work 168 hours at a time. We used to work 7 on and 14 off, and now we don't do that anymore. So just a lot of things happened and got really burned out, and that just wasn't good for us. And so got a new administrator and kind of got things straightened out, and now just work a 72 hours of pay period, but we can work more if we want to, but I'm just not going to do that right now.
Yeah.
I've worked plenty.
Well, 14 days off. That must have been nice for getting out during hunting season for sure.
Yeah, I got asked a lot, like, do you have a job? Do you work at all? I'm like, well, I do. I just, 1 week you don't see me, and then I'm available for 2 other weeks. And there's one girl that she would want to be gone a lot during the summer, and I would want to be off during the winter, so we would just kind of trade up. And so there was my weeks during the winter where I would only work like a half a week, so really I'd get like, you know, 2.5 weeks off. So we'd right. just make it work. But I'd get asked that a lot, like, what kind of job do you have? Or do you have a job? So, well, just make it work.
Yeah. I get asked that a lot. A lot of people don't realize you put over 20 years into a place, and between your time off and whatever schedule you can manage, it finally catches up. They don't see all the hard work early on to get you to that stage.
Very true. Very true. So
how long have you been waterfowl hunting?
Only about 5 years.
That's cool.
This is my 5th season. So
yeah.
Seems like a lot longer than that, I guess, because I've been to a lot of places and been fortunate enough to hunt a lot of places and had a lot of good opportunities, but it hasn't been, you know, a lot of people tell the story of, I've been doing this since I was a kid and went with my grandpa and things like that, but I didn't have that. I wasn't fortunate to have that experience. So I haven't been doing it very long, but I feel like I've just been fortunate to have a lot of really good experiences and hunt a lot of days compared to, you know, a lot of people because of my schedule. So
yeah.
I just kind of decided I was going to do it, and then learned as much as I could, and then just kind of jumped in with both feet and just did it.
So what What brought that about? How did you make the decision to get started with waterfowl hunting?
Well, I did always want to do it. And then my mom was sick and I took care of her. And, you know, you get to a point where you talk about a lot of things, especially when your parents dying and, you know, kind of what they want for you. And, you know, my mom had always said, you've been taking care of us for, been taking care of everybody else for so long, then I want you to finally go out and start doing stuff for yourself. And we had kind of talked about that. And I was dating a guy at the time who was a big waterfowl hunter, and I'd always been interested anyway. She said, you know, just at least go try it and see if you like it. And she passed away in February, and then, of course, COVID came. So that made, you know, time for like just kind of seeing, you know, on paper what it was all about.
Right.
And then just kind of decided, well, I guess this is what I'm going to do. You know, my first fall and winter without my mom. And I just kind of researched all the gear and read a lot of articles and bird identification. And you know, you're sitting at home because you can only go to work, and then you have 2 weeks off where there's nothing to do. So, I mean, I just researched it heavily and decided that that's what I'm going to do. And then I found some women's groups to go on some trips with. And once I shot my first duck, I was like, I can do this. So I'd always my stepdad taught me how to shoot like handguns and rifles, but never taught me how to shoot a shotgun. So I pretty much just taught myself how to shoot a shotgun. And luckily I was successful at learning. So that's it worked out pretty good.
Yeah. Well, sorry to hear you lost your mom. I lost my dad back in 2014. He was only 64. And that's life-changing. A lot of people that haven't lost a parent really don't understand what that does to you and how that changes you. But, you know, I can understand how tough that is, and sorry to hear that.
Yeah. She died 9 days after her 66th birthday. My dad had passed away in 2017, right before his 56th birthday. So, you just kind of, I don't know, being a healthcare provider, you think, oh, what, how am I going to take care of my parents? Like, my dad lived in Virginia, my mom lived here with me, and, you know, like, how am I going to split my time? And then now they're both gone. So I guess I'm just trying to, like my friend, one of my best friends said, you know, you have to kind of re-identify yourself because you're not their caregiver anymore.
Right, right. So, that's young. That's a shame. That's too young to go for sure.
Yeah. So.
So what was that first hunt like, trying to figure that out by yourself?
Well, luckily I was with, you know, a group. I went with Wilderness out of, they're started out of Kansas City, and now they've just grown by leaps and bounds. And so there was like, I think 24 of us women. They broke us up into groups of like four. And it was really exciting. You know, you like wait for this day, and it was Halloween 2020. And, you know, they teach about how to be safe, and you know you're supposed to be safe anyway. And the first duck that I had the opportunity to shoot at was a pintail, and it was cupped up right in front of me. And what did I do? I stood up, and the safety was on, and I was so excited. And they're like, "Shoot, shoot!" And I was trying so hard to, but the safety was on, and of course, then it flew away. So I ended up my first bird that I shot was a coot.
Okay.
So,
well, that counts.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't walk away empty handed that day. But the first real duck I shot was actually in Louisiana marsh. I shot a gadwall and actually shot off my hip. And that was a couple months later. But a couple weeks later, I went to Oklahoma and did a crane hunt and shot some cranes. So that was a little bit more redeeming, although I am a big coot fan, so it wasn't all for nothing that day.
That's cool. This episode is brought to you by Bluebird Waterfowl, creator of the Animator. The Animator is revolutionizing the waterfowl community with the world's first spinning wing decoy conversion kit. Turn your existing spinner into a water motion decoy in seconds and learn how to finish more birds with the sound of water. Guaranteed to boost your hunt or your money back. Flaring birds with your spinner is a thing of the past. Try one risk-free at bluebirdwaterfowl.com or at your favorite local outdoor supplier. So what was the most difficult thing, do you think, for your first season? Or maybe a couple, if you can't narrow it down to one.
I think, for one, not being able to call my mom and tell her. You know, you always want to, like, call your parents or call somebody. I think, two, just getting used to being around people that were maybe more experienced than me. I think because I'm a little bit older and I just started out, like, being with people that thought I had more experience, and they're like, oh, well, where else have you hunted? Oh, this is my second hunt ever. I've never, you know, been the one to say that I was more than what I was. And then just trying to figure stuff out. You know, I'm not one that's afraid to ask questions, whether it's a guy or a girl or whatever. You know, I started out hunting with ladies, and then I, you know, got in on some hunts with some guys, and, you know, just dealing with different personalities. Of course, waterfowl world is very diverse. So just dealing with different personalities and different people, and just the way everybody does something different. So,
sure.
And just trying to figure out what worked for me. So,
so how did that first trip with the men go? Did they, kind of treat you like one of the guys, or they kind of take you under their wing and give you a little special treatment?
I was really fortunate. Like, they didn't, nobody, I mean, that first season, even this, you know, moving forward, I've been fortunate. Like, I'm like, I didn't know that. And then I think they, I feel like I appreciate, people appreciate when you tell them, hey, I don't know that, or can you tell me about that or whatever. Absolutely. I think people appreciate that more than you acting like you know something that you don't know. So I've been fortunate that way. I'm just a very transparent person. If I don't know something, I'm going to tell you. Being able to just ask questions. Of course, five seasons later, I don't know, I've run into a little bit of everything. Yeah. So, I don't know. I've hunted with a wide variety of people. Not everybody is very friendly, guys included.
Yeah, unfortunately. And,
yeah. But for the most part, I've hunted with just really good people that have been very helpful and, you know, very encouraging. And we just had a good time, whether we've shot a ton or we haven't shot anything.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of person that, hey, we're out here and we're here to be safe and have a good time. And whether we kill a limit or we kill five birds, whatever, doesn't really matter. So,
yep, that's the right attitude for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being a father of two daughters, you know, it was kind of different for me showing them the ropes in the outdoors. So I've never had any new women come in from the outside to hunt with. So I'm always like, you know, I don't want to take the wrong approach. I want to make everybody feel comfortable. So on the one hand, you know, experience with daughters, but you know, you don't want to be that dad, like, you know, so it's good to hear you had a good experience. And yeah, most people are decent out there. Unfortunately, we run into a couple of knuckleheads here and there, but most people in the waterfowl world are pretty decent.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've told a couple guys to piss off, but it's just, I mean, that
as
happens.
You should, if they're misbehaving, absolutely.
Well, yeah, I mean, that could happen any day of the week, wherever I am. So, not going to lie. So,
Yep.
But I mean,
now, not everybody was raised the right way either, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, that could happen to a guy. That could happen to a girl. I mean, this is just the world. I mean,
yeah.
I just try to be a good person. I try to be a good person, and I hope that people will be good back, but you can't always expect that. Yeah. But I try to see the good in everything.
Sure. Yeah. It's nice to get your perspective on it though, because, you know, us men have a certain perspective on the way things are in the blind and the way that we handle ourselves around other men. And it's always nice to have a woman's perspective. We had Sarah Evans on a while back on the podcast, and I'm always really interested in getting their point of getting your point of view, getting a woman's point of view on how all that goes. So be patient with me if I ask some strange questions.
No, that's fine. I mean, I've hunted, and I have friends that are outfitters, and I've been like, hey, I'm going to come through. Do you have a spot? And they're like, you always have a spot to hunt here. And so I've been added on to guys groups, and the guys in the blind and even the guides thought I was just there to take pictures and not actually hunt. And I'm like, no, I'm here to hunt. Like I have my phone and I might take a couple pictures, but I'm not there to just take pictures. I'm here to actually hunt. And I remember one guide, that's exactly what he said. He goes, well, yeah, I just thought you're here to take pictures. And I remember I ended up loaning him my calls. I loaned some guys some shotgun shells. I'm like, no, I'm here to hunt. Like everybody takes some pictures, but I'm not here to take not just here to, you know, just not just here to be here. I go places to hunt, and that's why, you know, people that know me know that.
Absolutely. So,
but that has come up more than once.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it has.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I like to talk about it and make sure women's voices are recognized on this podcast, because I think it's important for other young ladies or even ladies a little bit older that were thinking about getting into waterfowl later in life like you did. And it's just nice to have that perspective and for everybody out there to hear and think, okay, well, if she can do that, I can get into that.
And that's what I try to express to everybody. Like, it's never too late to do something. If you want to go do it, then go do it. Like, you may find that you only prefer to hunt with women because, you know, you feel better that way. I can hunt with anybody. I don't care how old they are. I just found that I can just hunt with anybody. But I also have a very strong personality, so I just tend to not put up with anybody's crap. But
gotta have that for nursing, for sure.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, but you know, I guess you have to know your own personality and what you're willing to tolerate and how to deal with other people. So, but you have to let them know that, hey, I'm just not going to put up with whatever you're going to fork out at me. And I think guys can try to read you. And if they kind of feel like you're, you know, a little timid, they'll try to put that on you and try to play that on you. And I think as a woman, if you want to go out and hunt and try to be in a mixed group, you have to be prepared to stand up for yourself, because we can do anything. I mean, if you want to hunt, you can go hunt, you can go do it.
Absolutely. So tell me a little more about this women's organization that you found and that you started hunting with.
Well, it's called Wilderness. It's Wildherness. And I've only hunted with them once, but they actually was at their booth. There's a big conservation benefit every year that this guy Big Al puts on in Kansas. And he, all the conservation clubs from, Wichita State University that are skeet shooting to Women of the Wild to, I don't know, Pheasants Forever, any type of club is there, and it benefits all of them. But Wilderness, they do everything from taking women on trout fishing or crappie fishing or kayaking, or they have a go wild weekend where they have like seminars all weekend, from tying flies to foraging to flower pressing to beekeeping to, you know, shooting. I mean, it's everything. So you never know you never know what kind of classes or activities they're going to have. They usually have a pretty full calendar, but now they've extended to Colorado, Nebraska, Oklahoma, I think Missouri, and then up to New York. So they've really grown a lot just in the 5 years that I've been dealing with them and been with them. So they're just one of many women's organizations that are trying to get just women in the outdoors, period.
That's great. I saw a while back you ended up on the Delta Waterfowl cover with some of those ladies too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Feel very privileged that I was asked to do that. And speaking with the marketing director for Delta Waterfowl, she came down. We did that in Louisiana, in Gaydon, Louisiana. I was kind of wondering why they chose me. But they said they just wanted everyday women that were out, hunting to be on the cover. And so I just felt very privileged to be a part of that. It was a lot of fun, and they're really good people. And I just felt very privileged to be a part of that. So it's just really cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
Do you still do much with that organization now, or are you getting involved with any other ones?
Yeah. I've always been with DU, and then Delta Waterfowl hasn't really been big in Kansas, but they're really starting to get more chapters. I try to, there may not be like a set ladies group like that has a name, but I always try to hunt with other women during the season, and also support other women, like Sisterhood of Outdoors. I'm trying to go on a hunt with them. I think, Women of the Wild, they're really good as well. Actually one of them, Megan Amershek, she helped me get my first deer this year. So that was really good. They're really good people. So, they do a lot of other activities throughout the kind of Midwest and up into Michigan and things like that. So, they're great ladies as well. So I think there's probably an organization for women probably at any part of the United States. Or they have something going on. They try to really branch out. Even the American Daughters of Conservation, I went hunting in Tennessee with them this year. So they're really great ladies too.
Okay. This episode is also brought to you by the Duck Hole & Company, Attracting Feathers Together. They are a full-service habitat company located in North Carolina. If you have questions about waterfowl habitat or need some work done on your property, contact them through any of their social media platforms at the Duck Hole & Company. They can also fix you up with golden millet, also known as the duck buffet, and the best bang for your duck. So your first deer, was that a Kansas deer?
It was. I bought my tag at 550 and it was down at 724.
Nice.
That was beginner's luck.
Was that a buck tag or a doe tag?
It was a buck. I shot it with a bow.
Being in Kansas, I'm sure it was a pretty decent one.
It was decent. I mean, it was mature, had a real tall rack. Megan was nice enough to let me, her parents were nice enough to let me hunt on their land. And she'd been watching several, and she was like, hey, you know, these need to go. I have a few, if you would like to come try. And I had like a 2-day window and that was it. And we were just sitting and we saw the does come out and then lo and behold, here he comes. And I was really nervous. And so, but I got it done. So, and I was really sick too. So I had a lot of things stacked against me, but I got it done.
Yeah. I'm looking at your Instagram here. Was that the one from December?
Yes.
Yeah, that is a really cool looking buck.
Yeah. He's had really tall racks. So, I couldn't believe I did it. So.
Now, was that muzzleloader or shotgun? Would you use on that one?
It was shotgun season. I shot him with a bow.
Very cool. Congrats on that.
Right in the lung and right into the heart.
That's really cool.
So,
well, heck, stuff is going to start quivering when they see you coming. Now you got turkeys down, you got waterfowl down, you got a deer down. Now, what's next on your list?
I'm going to go offshore fishing in May.
Okay.
In Louisiana, so we'll see. I'm historically terrible at fishing, so we'll see if some can be caught.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
So you've done quite a bit of traveling too. You hit a couple of states this past year for hunting. Where all did you end up going?
Last season, I just went to Arkansas and Tennessee. I go to Arkansas every year, at least a couple times. And I went to Tennessee to Reelfoot. And then I hunted at home in Kansas. Usually, it's not uncommon for me to go to 6 or 7 states. But okay. With my shoulder, I was out of commission for quite a while. So
yeah,
I didn't really get to do much. It's kind of sad. My dogs are sad. But we'll make it up. So thought, well, it'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So are you a planner? Do you have kind of like your whole season planned out? Or are you kind of just play it by ear and go, you know, by invite? Or what's that look like for you?
I do plan out some, but then as the season gets closer or during the season, you know, things will come up and I'm like, sure, I can be in whatever right. state or wherever I have that day off or I have those days off. Let me get a ticket or let me hop in the truck and I'll be there. So try to be open for whatever can come my way. Try to make it happen. Not this season, but the season before, some friends were like, hey, do you want to come to Washington and hunt public? And I said, sure, I have those days off. So I got a ticket and flew up there and we hunted public for a couple of days and it was a lot of fun. So just never know what's going to come my way. So try not to book myself out too much so that I can get those things. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
What do you think your favorite place that you've been so far?
Washington State. I actually had the Columbia River.
Oh yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
I bet.
It was beautiful. It was really neat. So that's probably the prettiest place I've hunted so far.
Yeah. What kind of tactics were they using out there? Were you hunting from a boat on the river or did they have like walk-in spots or?
Our first day, they had us really just set on this, like, almost like this piece of wood up against the bank. And we kind of hid in between these big pylons.
Okay.
We shot from there and then the guide had a boat and he would, after we would shoot a volley, then he would go scoop him up with a net. And of course, when he'd go with the boat, then all of the water would come and we'd get, you know, soaked with water and all of our stuff would get soaked. So, but it was great. And then the next 2 days we hunted out of, a layout boat, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And you know, something to really try to figure out, because, you know, you set all your decoys and they have to be in a straight line. That's something really to figure out too, is how to set your decoys out in a straight line with weights at each end, and they have to be, you know, almost like in a right. V shape, and they have to be set straight. And it was super windy the second day, and so we have to go out and keep adjusting them. So two people were in the layout boat. We had four people. One person was sitting on the shore hunting, and then one person stayed in the boat and kept having to reset the decoys, but it was worth it. And then there's no calling, you know, you just wait for them to fly in. So
yeah,
it was just so peaceful out there.
Right.
And
right.
The birds were just so neat. And it was just, I don't know. I have pictures and it's just so beautiful. It looks like the pictures aren't even real.
Yeah. And they never do it justice either.
No. I mean, it was just, I wish I could have stayed for two or three more days. It was just, I definitely will go back out there again.
Yeah. So the layout boats, were you in the water in the layout boat? So were you kind of having to deal with the current moving that while you were trying to draw your bead?
Yeah. And
yeah, that's tough. I had that experience this year.
Yeah. And I think they're kind of getting frustrated with me because, like, you know, if you just cripple those birds, the sea lions are waiting underneath the water to come get your bird, and the bird keeps diving and diving and diving. And so
yeah,
I would just wait till the bird was, till I thought I could really kill it. So they'd be like, shoot. And I'm like, I'm just going to wait till it's right there. So, you know, I took three boxes of ammo and came back with, I don't know, a box and a half. Didn't shoot very many shells, but I shot a lot of birds, but, I just was like, I'm not going to shoot unless I think I can just kill it. So, and I think that aggravated the guide quite a bit. We had a radio, like a walkie talkie, and I'd hear him on there like, shoot it. And I'm like, I'm not going to shoot it till it's right there.
Yeah.
So, but, the only bird I didn't come home with was a golden eye, and there was only one that came into our spread, and I was out there with one other girl, and it was more on her side, and I just said, just shoot that. And so, you know, that's just the way it went, and she got hers, and I was happy for her, but there was just never another opportunity to do it. So just mean to go back out.
That's it. Yeah, Montana is the furthest west that I've waterfowl hunted, and I got a golden eye there a few years back. I'm going to try to get to Idaho this season. Hopefully it works out. The mallard hunting is supposed to be pretty spectacular there, so that'll be exciting.
Yeah, it's on my list of places to go.
Yeah. So walk us through that first trip out of state. You know, you've had the challenges of going through your first waterfowl season closer to home. What was that like? And kind of walk us through maybe some things you learned and maybe some tips for people wanting to travel, but maybe they're a little bit hesitant too.
Well, my first season I did go to Louisiana, and that was
okay.
But that, I mean, I did get to end up, I did, hunt. That was where I shot my first duck, but and I was able to hunt out in just the open marsh. So but you know, the next season I felt like I was way more prepared.
Sure.
And I ended up going to, you know, I usually drive everywhere and people think I'm crazy, but really it's just easier for me. But I did not drive to Washington State. But you know, everybody does things differently. Just from, you know, field hunting and learn how to set a massive spread for all these geese that are going to come in when you set, like, I don't know, 20 or 30 dozen, like, silhouettes out in the field and learn how to hide. And
right.
Learning how to do that and learning how to hide appropriately, that's one thing. And just the variety of hunting scenarios and situations, from being in an open field in Amarillo, Texas, with the wind blowing and having just kind of hiding under silhouettes and some socks, and figuring out that you know, you have to lay still and don't look up. That's the main thing. And to being in a pit blind and, of course, not looking up, but having to figure out how to jump up and shoot. And everybody else is used to doing that, so you have to figure out how to do that too. To being in a regular A-frame, just all kinds of hunting scenarios that you have to kind of figure out on the fly. That makes for an exciting time.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially when you've not ever done it and you're like, hey, I've never done this before. Well, okay, well, here's your crash course right here. And this is what I'm going to tell you to do. I have almost been shot twice.
Oh boy.
By being with inexperienced people and not because I did something, but, so that makes me a little leery sometimes.
What happened in those situations?
Well, I was hunting with, it was actually like my third hunt ever. We were in a pit blind and there was the guide and then me and then a girl and then another girl, another guide. And there was two specks coming around like the back of the blind. And so they were for basically me and the guide to shoot at. So we pulled up and shot at them. Well, the girl in the middle pulled up and had the barrel of her gun right behind my ear. And the other girl right beside her, and she had her finger on the trigger. And the girl right beside her saw that and grabbed the end of her barrel and like took her gun away. And I didn't know about that till later that night. So that was, hearing about that made me a little uneasy.
Sure.
And then there's another time we hunted like a ton of people on public land, that big Arkansas hunt that I did. Right. And it was just, we were super safe the whole time, but we were on a break and I took some ammo down to somebody else and I, you know, yelled, hey, I'm walking down here. And I yelled, hey, I'm walking back. Well, then a big group of birds came in. I was rushing back and somebody called the shot. And well, I looked and this guy had his gun right in my face and I just hit the deck.
Oh man.
And he's like, yeah, I almost shot you. And I said, well, I'm glad you didn't.
Jeez. Yeah, so, it's important. I think it's important to share those stories so we can all take a second and reflect on that, because it's, you know, it doesn't matter if you're just starting to hunt, if you've hunted forever, stuff happens and you've always got to be on your game to try to do the best you can to be safe.
Yeah, it's real life. I mean, if that one girl hadn't been paying attention, I mean, it was the day after my birthday, I would have had my head blown off. And if I hadn't been paying attention, you know, to what was going on, and I literally just like hit the deck. I mean, I just literally flattened out. If I hadn't been paying attention to what was going on, I mean, you can only run so fast in waders on a levee. I mean, people pay attention, but stuff happens fast. And, you know, it would have been purely accidental and that guy would have felt horrible. So sure. I think everybody just needs to be super aware of what they're doing. And now I just prefer to be on the end. I don't know. Yeah. I just feel better on the end. I don't know. But I just try to always be on the end because that's where I feel comfortable. So
Right.
Whether I have
it. Yeah, that's or not. That's one of the reasons why. And I don't purposely keep my group small just for that reason, but that's an argument for keeping the group smaller. I know a lot of different places in the country, they like to hunt big groups and get those big limits for everybody. But yeah, like you said, got to pay attention, got to be careful.
Yeah. Feel safer when I hunt with like friends that I've hunted with a bunch, but I mean, anything can happen with anybody, but I just,
for sure.
I just feel safer on the end. Yeah. So,
absolutely.
And the people I hunt with know why.
Yeah. This episode is also brought to you by Rigam Right Waterfowl, producers of the most well-designed and well-built products, tried and tested by the most heavily seasoned hunters on the planet. Their mission has always been and will always be to design, build, and supply the most innovative and high-performance hunting products available at a reasonable price. They will not succumb to outside pressure to cheapen their products and will continue to take bold steps and huge risks to separate themselves from their competition. They dominate in customer service, knowing that their end-use customers are the very backbone of their existence. Above all else, they operate with honesty and integrity and treat people fairly, never compromising these principles in pursuit of profit. Check them out at rigemright.com or your favorite local outdoor retailer. Can you think of anything that stands out as something that you learned that has really helped you level up? Or a couple of things?
One thing I think, and I tell this to other people, is like, do what works for you. Like, mm-hmm. don't like buy the gun that everybody else is, because everybody likes it, and you know, don't just follow the trend of what everybody else is doing. Like, do what works for you. And I'm kind of a creature of habit, so I do what works for me. Shoot what you feel. I mean, there's people that feel comfortable shooting, I don't know, 60, 70 yards out, and they feel like they're going to hit that. Right. Good for them. I don't feel comfortable doing that, especially with the price of ammo. I just am like, I'll be with my friends and they're shooting and I'm like, I'm not going to shoot that. I can't hit that. Still, that's like, do what works for you. I don't know. I hunt with friends that are guides. I've hunted with guides. If it's my friend's property and they're kind of putting it on, I just like, don't guide the guide.
Right.
I try to always be the bigger person and not try to run the show. I mean, let's just have fun and all get along. Another thing, I learned from a friend of mine, our dogs go to the same trainer and he's a guide and I hunted with him, is that if I'm working my dog, then I'm the one that shoots the cripples. Cause if I shoot my dog, that's my problem. Somebody else shoots my dog, they're going to write me a big check. So something else that I've learned and that I go by, is that if somebody else's dog is out there, I will not shoot any cripples. So,
yeah.
Unless, you know, they don't care, I always ask. But if that's my dog out there, then I shoot all the cripples, and that's kind of my rule. And I just announce it before the hunt. And I just let people know that. You know, you shoot my dog, then you write me a big check.
At a minimum.
I mean, I have lots of money. I have thousands upon thousands of dollars invested in each one. So
yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep. No doubt about it.
They're my kids. So.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But, and, you know, not every hunt is going to be exactly like you want it to go.
Yeah.
You can be there all day and not see a bird, and it's not the end of the world.
Sure. Yep. It's great advice.
Yeah. A day outside is better.
Yeah, go ahead.
A day outside is better than any day inside. So.
Yeah, for sure. Have you done any solo hunts in your 5 years?
Oh yeah. With the marsh just being 15 miles from my house, I just take my dog out in public. There's a walk-in pool that has blinds that are already like set up. Basically they're just kind of mounds out in the water. And when we go, we're there for at least half the day, cause it's quite a trek out into the water. I just throw out, probably a dozen decoys or so. And, had some good hunts out there, just me and the dog. We've also been skunked. So, But and then I have 2,000 acres of private that mainly just use for turkeys, and it has 8 ponds. And I, my young dog Stella, I'll take her and go hunt her on like 2 of the ponds. I try to leave the ponds as a rest area for the birds, mm-hmm. since the marsh is close by and it gets shot up pretty bad. And we have a lot of outfitters around here. So, but I will go hunt a couple of those ponds, and, you know, it's just, I mean, I like to go just me and my dogs. So, yeah, it's kind of nice just go by yourself, or even just like one other person, just go.
Yeah. Yeah. You can, learn a lot by hunting by yourself. You're responsible for everything, every decision, how the decoys are going to be, how your calling's going to be, how your hide's going to be. I mean, that's what I recommend to a lot of people starting out. It's important to go with some mentors and get the basics, but if you want to level up quick, go on some solo hunts by yourself and figure it out.
Yeah. I started doing that. Actually, I got Jake is my male. I got him like January, my first season. And so I took him out the fall of the next season, and we started going out hunting by ourselves the next fall. So I learned a lot. I'm not the greatest. I will not duck call. I will not blow a duck call in front of anybody else. I'm not very good, but you know, it gets the job done.
That's all that matters.
You know, you're out there and there's 6 other blinds, and some of them have massive spreads. You know, there's like 10 guys in one blind and they have massive spreads, and you know, you're trying to call ducks away from them or ducks that have been flared by them, and you're trying to get them over to your blind. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to do that. So
right.
I must be doing something okay, but I will not blow a duck call in front of anybody else. Because I am not good at it.
Well, there's something to be said for that. Like you said, it gets the job done. If you listen to wild ducks, none of them sound exactly the same.
No.
Obviously, there's some technique and some people that sound extremely good. But, you know, like you said, if it gets the job done, you're doing just enough to get by. That's just fine some days.
Yeah. I've actually out at the marsh, there was a blind of guys, and they didn't realize I could hear everything they were saying. And they were like, they had their binoculars, of course, and they were like, hey, you see that lady over there? She thinks that she can just come out here and hunt, blah, 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 blah. And so they flared some birds. And then I actually called their birds over and shot their birds.
And
oh, damn. And I yelled back at them and I said, I've heard every word you said, and I just shot your birds. I said, I must not be too bad. And so then they didn't say anything else. So
that's fantastic. I love to hear stories like that.
So, you know, it wasn't a horrible day.
Yeah. So how did you get into the waterfowl dogs? Did you have any dogs growing up or before you started waterfowl hunting?
I've always had a dog most of my life. I always had a cat. My mom was kind of a cat person, but we always had a dog too. Yeah. And I've always had some type of dog, but I've had several labs. And so it was a no-brainer when I actually found Jake on Facebook. My friend, Katie, her cousin is a trainer in Louisiana, and he posted Jake on Facebook, and it was just the right place, the right time. It just had me scrolling at the right time, and I just said, I'll take him. So
okay.
He sent me some videos, and I said, I'll take him. And he had had him for like a month, and he's not papered or anything, but he's like, he's one hell of a retriever. And I said, well, I'll send you some money. And I was going to go down and get him, but I thought, well, these people's houses that he lived with, you know, since he was a puppy. And then he's been with him for a month, and I'm going to bring him home and I'm going to send him to somebody else. That's not really fair. So I just said, well, I'll just come down in March and meet him and just, you know, send me videos of him. And he's a retrieving machine. He lives to retrieve. Yeah. And so, and then he was gone for like, I don't know how many months, like the next summer. So then I ended up with Stella because I missed him. So now I have Stella. And she's my British lab, and she's Miss Personality, big personality and total opposite of Jake. And she's doing pretty well. she was having some like false pregnancies that really messed with their hormones and messed with their training. And so I just finally got her spayed. And so now she's back with the trainer and he said like, she's a new dog. So this is going to be her year. So she always looks miserable when she has to, she's really not. She's very animated.
So how much time out of the week do you have to spend keeping up on that training?
Jake is pretty much like he's in automatic mode. So, but still I train him, you know, work with him probably at least an hour a day. And Stella, you know, she takes a little bit more. Sometimes, you know, I try to give her at least an hour a day. You know, when it was really cold, it was kind of hard to get out there with them because they were cold and I was cold. So we kind of missed out on some when it was super cold out, but try to do it as much as we can just to keep up on things. So, especially since they didn't get to hunt much this year.
Right, right. This episode is also brought to you by CK Custom Calls, custom built in the USA from the great state of Texas. Handmade in a world of mass-produced. Check out their calls on their Instagram and Facebook pages at CK Custom Calls. They showcase calls for sale there, and you can also contact them for a custom order. So what's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you while you're hunting, or the craziest thing that you've ever seen while you were in the outdoors?
I don't know.
Or just a favorite story, if you have one.
Oh, well. I guess be hunting public land. You know, when you beat people to the hole and then they're younger than you, so then they act like it's all about, you know, well, you're more privileged than us because, you know, you're older and you have more ways to get here and, you know, and then they get their parents involved on social media and, you know, you're in the dark already and, you know, you're all at the line at the same time at 4 o'clock in the morning and you, you know, you're all racing to the hole and, you know, then you beat them there and then turns out they're like 15, 18 years old, whatever. So, you know, we always are nice about it and like, well, you are welcome to come hunt with us or we can get breakfast afterwards or whatever, but this is what happens. And, I won't say what state I was hunting in, but these kids literally got their parents involved on social media. That was the craziest thing I've probably ever been involved with. I'm like, you know what? This is life. And are you going to call your parents all the time?
Right.
Probably not. Right. Well, I guess you maybe will. I don't know. So, And then, you know, you have permission to hunt somewhere and you get there in the morning and somebody's already set up because they have permission to.
Yeah.
Those are the worst. So,
For sure.
And then I guess Jake's first season hunting with me, it was my birthday and he got tangled up in a jerk rig and I had to dive in with all my clothes on swim across this pond and untangle him. That was probably the craziest thing I've had to do in a hunt. So, but he was out there fighting. So I thought, well, this is a no brainer. So I just dove in and
and
swam over there. So
that's crazy.
And got him out. He still picked up the goose though and swam the rest of the way.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So what's next for Ashley? What do you got going on coming up this season and maybe looking down the road a few years?
Well, I have a bucket list of things I want to do. I'm going to try to get to California this year. And get my teal trifecta. No, I've been fortunate. I shot that blonde spec. I have a storm widgeon in my freezer. I need to get to a taxidermist or it won't be any good. I shot my first band this year, shot my first buck this year. I just been fortunate enough to shoot some sea ducks. I'm really trying to get my 41 done. So I had put in for a tundra swan permit this year and I didn't get it. So I'd really like to reapply this year and get that. Okay. But I just try to every year add a new state to my box of checkoff. So that's my main thing is just adding at least one new state every year. So
that's a good goal.
Yeah. You know, I'm not getting any younger. None of us are. So, you know, I got a little later start. So my main thing is just to try to add a new state and get more species, every year. And I've been, this sounds ridiculous, but I've been trying to get a freaking hooded merganser for like 2 years. Damn, things keep eluding me. So I need to get one this year.
That's going to have to be a question I should ask every guest because it's always like a weird one. Like you wouldn't expect that somebody's trying to get, I like that.
Yeah. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but the damn hooded merganser has been like,
yeah,
I just need a freaking hooded merganser and my life can move on. I don't know why. I mean, it's on the waterfowl 41, but I just, I had had a shot at one twice. There was one that landed out in Western Kansas on public land. Me and this other guy were hunting out there and we were chit chatting because it was slow. And I looked, and I said, is that a freaking hooded merganser? And he goes, it is. And by the time I'm like, got my gun out of my, you know, my layout blind and got it, the freaking thing was starting to fly off. So I, of course I missed, but now it just made me want one more. So this year I'm getting a freaking hooded merganser.
There you go. So tell me about your first band. That's pretty special.
I was actually hunting with the American Daughters of Conservation group, and we were hunting at Real Foot, but we ended up hunting on the Mississippi River just inside of Missouri. And we shot into a group of mallards, and I was the last one to shoot this bird, and I kept an eye on it. I don't know. I just, when you know you shoot a bird, like I try to keep my eye on that one that I know I shot. Sure. And lo and behold, that sucker was banded. So
that's great.
Yeah. So because I was hunting with ADC, you know, our ADC president was with us. And so the original band went with her on like the first ADC duck that was ever killed. And then, we got replica bands as a group, but, okay. So that's just the right thing to do. But, now I know that I shot that bird. So it was still pretty cool. So, but I mean, we all enjoyed it. But it was like, they go to Real Foot every year. No, I kept my eye on that bird when he picked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you remember where it was banded and how old it was?
It was banded in Canada, and it was banded in 2023. And I guess they do get a lot of Canada-banded mallards down there at Real Foot, Real Foot. So, but still, I mean, it wasn't a geriatric bird by any means, and it wasn't a world traveler. Sure. But still, Canada is not just down the road.
Yeah, so, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Traveled a good ways.
Yeah, probably at least twice, so. But yeah, it's still really cool.
Absolutely. So congratulations on that. That's a big milestone.
Yeah. No, I mean, living in Kansas, we don't get a lot of bands here. So, but still, I was pretty proud of that.
Sure. Well, I've taken up about an hour of your time. I want to be respectful of that. And I've got some rapid fire questions to wrap up if you're ready.
Sure.
What's your favorite waterfowl?
Speckbelly geese.
Okay. What's your favorite waterfowl recipe?
Had to be duck tacos.
Okay. How do you prepare those?
Especially mallard breast. Just like with some duck fat and in a cast iron skillet with some like rosemary and some duck fat and some like spices just seared on each side, medium rare, cut into really thin slices. Put on with, my friend makes them just like, this like kind of spicy, little bit of spicy sauce and, like some coleslaw type, salad in there. And there you go.
That sounds good. That's right up my alley.
Yeah, they're really good.
What's your favorite shotgun?
Browning A5 Wicked Wing.
Okay.
Kind of, but my most favorite is my Belgian made vintage Sweet 16.
There you go.
So
very cool. What's your favorite snack in the blind?
Oh, Little Debbie's.
Okay.
For sure.
Standard.
Donuts, especially.
Yeah. Powdered sugar or chocolate?
Powdered sugar.
There you go. Do you prefer hunting lakes, marshes, or rivers?
Rivers.
Okay. And how many decoys do you use on an average hunt?
When I hunt by myself?
Sure.
12.
Okay.
When it's late season, I'd put out, 6 ducks and 4 goose floaters.
Okay.
Works every time.
Good tip. You prefer to go by boat, kayak, or walking in?
I like to walk in.
Okay. And what's been your favorite place to waterfowl hunt? You might have already answered this.
I'd have to say Washington State, but probably my favorite recurrent state to go waterfowl hunting in is Arkansas.
You can't beat that.
No, it's just very diverse there. And I have a lot of friends down there. So
very cool. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your day to join me this evening. Let everybody know where they could find you if you want people to check out your Instagram or anything else you got going on.
My Instagram is the_Ashley_Barda. I'm also on Facebook, but I hang out mainly on Instagram.
That seems to be where most of the duck hunters are.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is.
I don't know. I actually have more friends on Facebook, but I kind of quit adding people on Facebook that send me friend requests because I'm like, just go follow me on Instagram or I'll follow you back because it's just easier. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate it, Ashley.
Thank you. I appreciate having me on.
No problem. Have a good night.
All right. You too.
Huge thank you again to Ashley for taking time out of her day to join me on the show. And thank you all for tuning into this episode. I really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Migration Waterfowl. We also have a Facebook group for the podcast. Please join us there as well. And if you could, please check out our YouTube channel and subscribe while you are there. Lots of great content coming that way throughout the rest of the year. You can find the link to our merchandise store in the show notes below or on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Check out our shirts, hoodies, thermoses, coffee, and more over there. And now through the end of April, 10% of everything we sell will go to Delta Waterfowl. We got a brand new design over there. Check out our duck stamp t-shirt and hoodie. If you like what you've heard here, please take a moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Send me a message or email after you leave the review, and I will mail you a podcast decal. And get out there and enjoy the outdoors, but make sure you seek out a relationship with the one who created everything. Matthew chapter 27, verses 46 through 54 says, "From noon until 3 in the afternoon, darkness came over all the land. About 3 in the afternoon, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, 'My God, why have you forsaken me?' When some of those standing there heard this, they said, 'He's calling Elijah.' Immediately one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine, vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, 'Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him.' And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rock split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, 'Surely he was the Son of God.' And remember, the migration is coming. Be ready when it arrives. Tune in next week to hear another great guest on the Migration Waterfowl Podcast."
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.